Blog Talk Radio.
It's Monday night, and we're live with the latest episode of Graphic Policy Radio, where comics and politics meet. This is the show for folks who wonder if Superman's super hearing is part of the NSA's prison program. I'm your host, Brett, and joining me is my co-host, the brilliantly entertaining Alana. How you doing?
Hello, how are you?
I'm doing good. So our agenda this week, we didn't have anything super crazy, but like last week, I think we will chat about the comics that we have read, and you caught up on some of them that I was kind of hinting at last week. So I know we want to talk about X-Men, the Brian Woods comic, which was the top-selling comic of May,
great.
Kind of awesome. And then we're going to, I just feel like we have to talk about it, is even for 2 seconds, mention Superman, which opens up this weekend. But that will be down the road, and literally that could be a 2-minute conversation. So I have been waiting all week and want to hear your opinion of what you think about X-Men, number one.
Well, I'm really happy with the roster. I mean, there are some less used characters who I'd love to see kind of brought out for this, because I do think a lot of these characters are already starring in a lot of other stuff. But they're all good characters. It definitely, story feels like you're opening in the middle of something. It's another good example of something that is being labeled as Marvel now that I don't think could possibly or should even remotely be considered Marvel now, because it is not new reader friendly. I mean, there are things that are more unfriendly to new readers than this, but I would certainly not highlight it as being particularly reader-friendly. I don't know. I have to raise my eyebrow to the fact, like, the first story that is in the all-women X-Men has to do with a baby to start with. And I think I know the direction that the story is going to be going in, but I don't know. I think it's okay. I mean, I like Brian Wood a lot. I'm absolutely going to pick up the next issue, without a doubt. There are a few gratuitous drawings of Aurora that, like, don't even make any sense. I don't know, if you flip in your comics to page they're not numbered anymore. I'm so old school, I can't even remember that. The page where you have Aurora flying over the Metro North line, there's a really bizarre, like, here are my boobs next to my head drawing. Overall, the art's okay. It's not ugly. It's not great. The facial expressions vary some, although they often have similar expressions in the same page. The main visual thing I can point to is I really like Storm's new casual wear outfit. It's, like, pretty darn accurate. And I'm amazed that people continue to give Jubilee decade-inappropriate pink sunglasses. Like, you can totally have pink sunglasses, but if you're going to have pink sunglasses, they probably shouldn't look like those.
I'm thinking at this point, it's just kind of a running joke. Like, this is what she's known for, and she's just going to have it.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. I get the only people who wear, like, sunglasses like that would be people who are doing it in irony, and that does not seem like a very Jubilee. Like,
no.
Hey, look at my stupid sunglasses thing. But they're certainly using that as a color in general, which I think is fine. I don't know. I guess I'm disappointed. But it's because my expectations were so high. It's not a bad comic, Lord knows. It's not bad. It's just not. It's not as good as I was hoping. What were thinking? What are your thoughts?
I really, really liked it. I thought the art was pretty solid. The women look like women, and they vary, which I was kind of happy about. There wasn't, like, that same face that certain artists have that she'll go remain nameless. Exactly. You knew who I was talking about. And I like the story. Like, it's one of those that I know if I went into reading it, not reading other X-Men, I would be like, okay, clearly I'm missing something. But you weren't. Like, I've been reading it for a while, and I can't think of what the hell, like, this has to do, unless I missed something with the final issue of X-Men that I probably still have sitting in my box that I just didn't bother reading. There's nothing that came before that's really, really important or impacted the issue at all. So, I mean, to me, the only thing I would say the downside to me was it was a very straightforward, like, chase comic, if that makes sense, where it's the story of, oh, this person's on the run and someone's being pursued. And that was kind of it. But, like, that was, to me, the downside of it, like, the worst part of it all, was it wasn't, the story wasn't as original enough, if that makes sense. Like, it was a very straightforward, like, this person is being pursued by another person, we don't know why, we're just kind of thrown in the middle of it. Like, I feel like I've seen this often, and that was the worst part. But as far as, like, the characterizations, I think Brian Wood nailed all the characters. Like, they all had personalities, they all had separate personalities, and it kind of fit really, really well. Like, for me, something really, really clicked about it.
You know, you're right. There definitely were unique characterizations for each of the characters, and it was done subtly, so it wasn't like, I'm the this one, I'm the that one, I'm the this,
yes.
I'm the one who's like, blah, blah. Like, you're right. That actually is impressive. He has a lot of characters in here. They all seem distinct, but none of them seem like they're being put into an archetypal role. So, yeah, that actually is quite impressive. I don't know. I think he's so freaking brilliant, and this isn't as good as The Massive, but I guess
So this is kind of the funny thing about Brian Wood, is, like, he's brilliant in The Massive. He's brilliant with Conan. Like, I've never liked Conan. I like Conan. His other stuff he's written, like Demo, Local, New York 5, New York 4, like, all that stuff's just amazing. His X-Men stuff, I don't think is strong as a lot of his other work. I actually think his X comics are the weakest of the batch. Out of everything he's done.
We should blame his editors. That's my new theory, though. The Marvel editors were stepping on his style and brilliance.
I read Wolverine,
the Alpha, and the Omega, and there actually was some cool stuff in there, but the end kind of sort of dragged out.
Yep.
It didn't really make any sense in the end of the day. I mean.
And at the same time, like, it wasn't as solid as his other stuff, and he's currently writing, I think, Ultimate Comics X-Men. I'm pretty sure it's that one. And it's good, and there's some, like, really cool concepts in it, but at the same time, like, compared to The Massive, or I think, I will say the other series that he as a writer clearly is unchained and can do whatever he feels like, there is a noticeable difference in his writing, and the X-Men stuff, it's not bad, it's still better than, like, a good chunk of what's put out every month.
Oh, God, yeah, sure.
Yeah, but it's not his strong point, which I thought was really... really thought was interesting. Like, all his X-Men stuff, like, it's good, but compared to, like, The Massive, hell no. I mean, The Massive still, to me, is one of the best comics out there every single month.
Mm-hmm.
Just because the comic makes me think. Like, it's one of the few comics out there that month in, month out, makes me think.
Yeah, the concept is so freaking brilliant, and he maintains it with such intensity, and is, you know, the plot lines are, it's incredibly well plotted. Like, I fully believe he knows exactly where this is headed. It's not like there's one direction that it's headed, you know?
Yeah.
Oftentimes there's a choice between saying, okay, I know that this is going in one way, but there's only one source of momentum, and this is, like, a lot. The Massive is really fantastic, and folks should check it out if they haven't checked it out yet. I know that we have voted it as the best new comic of the year last year, I believe. So.
Yes. Yeah, Ed would deservedly. I mean, that comic, I've handed it to people who, I handed it to people who don't read comics.
Yeah.
And they immediately are hooked, are like, holy crap, this is so good.
I've been trying to get all my friends who do climate change work to read the comic, and, like, I don't know if they have. I should send them an email. I was nagging my friends who work on climate change. Like, you totally have to read The Massive.
I would be fascinated.
Book about people that you work with.
Yeah, like, I would be fascinated to know what they think about it. Like, people who work on climate change, I actually really would love to know. I'm trying to think if I know anyone that works for, like, any of the more, we'll call it, hands-on, climate or pro-environmental groups, been more radical of the nature. Like, I can't think of anyone that I know that does, because I'd be fascinated to know.
I know folks who absolutely either do now or had back in the day, and I would really like to get them to do a write up of it or take a look or something.
Yeah, we should reach out. I'm going to go. That actually would be a great idea, is to reach out, find a couple of our environmental friends, and just see what the hell they think.
The round table. Yeah, totally.
Yeah, because one, like, I don't know how accurate it is. I have no idea, the depiction.
Well, there's no scientific reasons per se given for, like, what the cause is, but yeah, like, the symptoms are sort of like, this is how the world would react if X, Y, and Z happens.
With that, there's also a lot of stuff that's put in there about his details about how animals react to it all that I've wondered.
Yeah.
How much is, like, my girlfriend knows marine biology, and she hasn't at any point stood up and been like, no, that's totally wrong. So I'm guessing it's pretty good. Actually, the funniest thing she had the biggest issue with, and I didn't notice it, is in the first issue there's a memo from the Department of Homeland Security that's dated, like, 2001 or 2002 or something like that.
It didn't exist.
It didn't exist. I was just like, wow, you're the one that picked that up, and I did it.
That's something we should pick up.
I don't know.
I mean, I really, but the thing that you said that was completely true for me is it really felt like when I picked up this new X-Men book, like, I missed something. And I read other X-Men books, but not all of them. I'm certainly not a completist. But the fact that you share my confusion about feeling like you must have missed something is saying something. But, like, the plight of a comics fan is to assume everything is always a media race, right? And that, there's always going to be information that you're not going to have, and to just roll with it. Like, that's what I always tell people, But that also is not what you want for a Marvel Now line.
But yeah, that's something that's been kind of really interesting to me is Marvel Now as a whole, is a lot of them just aren't new reader friendly and really rely on what's come before. Others are very new reader friendly and just totally disregard what's come before.
What are some of the Marvel Now comics that really disregard what's come before? Because I have not found one. I've seen some fantastic comics in Marvel Now line, fantastic, but none of them really seem to meet that description to me.
So to me, the ones that, like, really ignore what has come before, like, I think Thor: God of Thunder, you can pick up and just start reading. Like, you might sit there and be like, was there something before? But there's not. Like, this is a fresh take. There might be some references to stuff that's come before, but even then, like, it's not important. All it is a story of Thor versus this god killer through the ages, and that's it. So as you get into the story, like, that's it, and it's an amazing story. Like, I think it's one of the best Marvel Now books out there right now. Jason Aaron. Who's another, like, a really talented writer. I mean, Jason Aaron's did Scalped is the first thing that I think of, and Scalped is easily one of the best things to come out of, like, the last decade. It's one that you can easily pick up, no problem at all. Let's see here. I mean, Deadpool you could, but Deadpool's just kind of written that way. I hated it. Like, the first arc I thought was horrible. The main Fantastic Four series, you could. It would help to know what came before, but the story is pretty straightforward of them just taking off and going into space. So far, you haven't needed to know anything that's come before. With the flip side, FF, you need to generally know what the hell came before. I'm trying to think what else. I mean, Daredevil's just been a great series and hasn't really changed at all for Marvel Now. Other than that, like, it's mixed. Like, a lot of them were way more reliant on history and continuity than I expected. They weren't as new reader friendly as I'd hoped.
Yeah, like FF, right? We both adore FF. It's funny, it's creative, it's It's smart. It's just fantastic. Nothing about it says new reader friendly other than the art style. I think the art style is stylish in a way that, like, your friends who don't necessarily read comics would not be embarrassed to be seen with it. And certainly people who read alt comics and don't read mainstream comics will certainly, like, take a look at the art and be like, yeah, it's Mike Awer. That looks really great. But story-wise, like, expects you to know who the Inhumans are, okay?
That is
not something casual readers are supposed to know.
Or even more, it expects you to know who Scott Lang is and his history.
Yeah, and, like, that his daughter died, and, I mean, it's just all kinds of stuff that there's no reason why people who aren't serious Marvel geeks wouldn't already know.
Yeah, I mean, that's a pretty vital...
I'd love
vital...
to talk to someone at Marvel to be like, what were you guys going for there? Because none of it makes sense to me what they're labeling as what title.
Well, see, that was the thing, was, I mean, when they announced Marvel Now, their big thing was, unlike DC... Still there? Or did I lose you?
My cat knocked my phone over because...
I currently have a cat staring at me, and it's creepy. So Marvel's biggest thing was, when they did Marvel Now, was that they didn't want to get rid of continuity, but they wanted to make new reader-friendly comics, which is fine.
Right,
and
which we thought was the right way to do it, yeah.
Yeah, and it's the right way to do it. And it seems that they tried to do some series of being like, here is a series that's great for new readers, here's a series that's good for people who are old-time fans, and they've kind of... they haven't kept it up. Like, I think a lot of it has kind of fallen into the general, like, you need to know what the hell came before. Some of them, I mean, it was a mix. Like, that's kind of...
And if so, then what does it even mean, you know?
Yeah, I'm like, to me, the kicker, and it drives me nuts, is there is no reason that the beginning of each comic, they couldn't have used the AR app to, like, run you through the key points that you might not know.
Yeah, isn't that the point of the AR app?
I think so. I like never use it because it's a pain in the ass to use.
Yeah, it doesn't really register easily.
No. Sadly not. Great concept.
But I try it.
Yeah.
I try it. They'd have to invest more effort in making it work, both in terms of developer hours and in terms of content. I really like the idea, though, but... I always want more metatextual information, right? You're like, I want to go beyond what's limited on the paper. But
I mean, to me, like, the AR app is the perfect opportunity of being like, here is our Marvel Wikipedia, basically, of all these characters. This is what you need to know. Here's the key points. Here is the characters that matter. Here is some background that you probably should know about them. You know, here's what came before in the previous issue. Like, that's what it should be used for. And that's how you make stuff reader friendly, but it is what it is. But yeah, I mean, overall, like, compared to DC, I think Marvel Now has been more successful. I'm still reading more Marvel Now.
Absolutely. Yeah. Sorry, I feel bad for Brian Wood. We should be talking more about his new book, but I'm excited it sold so well. I think people were really curious, you know, and what was the story going to be? I mean, he's also really popular. X-Men is a really popular book. The whole having it be all female has really gotten folks talking on top of it all. Someone, Andrew Belosky, who's a friend of ours through the internet of sorts, posted for Out Magazine. He's like a comics writer for Out Magazine. Talk about a cool job. Did like his... what, like, his gay Avengers team would be today?
The gay X-Men. It was gay X-Men team.
Oh, it was gay X-Men? I thought it was gay Avengers. Whatever.
I thought it was X-Men.
Gay,
well, whatever.
Team Marvel. Who would be on it, which I think was a really fun exercise. I hadn't heard about the new predominantly racial minority Avengers team coming out. It has some of my favorite characters in it, and then it has some people I've never heard of, so color me intrigued, you know.
So there was a good. So I mean, back in the day, folks asked Tom Brevoort about that. Was like, where is the Black Avengers? He responded, and I kind of agreed with him. Was like, you can't just throw a team together because that actually is like worse than, or just as bad, I think, as like not having a team of that sort. Like, you need to have a reason to have a team like that. Like, throwing them together is just weird. It's just an odd thing to do. But this, I'm going to be intrigued. This Mighty Avengers team comes out, spun out of the Infinity storyline, which should be starting up relatively soon, next month or two. The Infinity is basically something's going on in space, a whole bunch of the Avengers have to take off, and Earth is kind of left undefended. Thanos comes down and just starts messing stuff up.
So, the people of color are the B team? Is that what this is about?
Or they're people that are just taking out. That's what stuck out to me is, why the hell aren't some of these guys heading out? I can kind of say Luke Cage probably doesn't have... Well, so Luke Cage, you got an
excuse. Luke Cage wouldn't go because he doesn't want to go. He would.
Right.
He wouldn't want to go. But
he basically gave up.
Otherwise...
Yeah.
I'm okay with Luke Cage not leaving the planet to go save it immediately on account of having a baby. But, these are some heavy hitters. You'd probably want them on that team. And the way you just describe it, it makes it sound like the people of color were, the B team.
This is my understanding of it. These are some of the people that are left on Earth. They're the ones that have to save the day. I'm kind of fascinated by it just to see how the hell they pull off that without making it sound exactly like you're describing.
I think that they're going to be toned up and not handle that at all.
It will be interesting. The one that I'm actually really fascinated by is a real rather obscure character called Blue Marvel, who was in So he was in a miniseries that came out probably 2 years ago, 3 years ago. I don't remember if he's actually been in anything else. He might have been in an issue two or something else. He was one of those characters that was kind of retconned, the century. But he was kind of cool. So his story was, I forgot if he was in the army or something, but basically he gets these powers or has these powers. It's the 1960s, 50s, and 60s. So you've got an African-American guy with superpowers in a rather divisive time in America. So he has this persona called Blue Marvel who's puts on the mask to hide the fact that he's black because he doesn't, knows that if he were to take off the mask, everyone would go apeshit and be like, here's this guy with superpowers, get him, get him, get him. So
right.
He wears
right.
the mask and does that. And I forgot, the story's really, really kind of cool and was done pretty well. And I don't know if it was done in trade, but it's worth checking out if you can find it. Some of it's really, really solid. There's some instances with, him and, I think, Kennedy. And it kind of explores the whole race thing at the time. It makes you think of, would it make sense to have minority characters back in that time, or how, not necessarily would it make sense, but how would people react?
How would it actually work? Yeah.
Yeah. And at that point, when you start thinking about it, because it's always a question of why aren't there more minority characters from back in the 40s and the 30s and the 50s and all that? But you think about the time, it gets you think a little bit, there weren't any, but also how would have society reacted to this?
They would have been scared shitless, and that would be an interesting comic to tell. So that's why I think this is a really neat idea that Blue Marvel series that takes place back in the 50s. That would be really cool.
It was good. It
I
went
think
over
was,
time.
Yeah.
It was obscure, but it was good. It's one, if you can find it, go for it. I think it's well worth checking out. And to me, he's this uber... He's almost the Marvel version of Superman right now. He has this massive amount of power. He can do all kinds of stuff to kick ass. And he's super powerful, and it's one of those, what do they do with him? Sentry
had a great golden age name.
Yeah, I love the idea.
The name
actually,
is totally of the period.
Yeah, I really like his costume, too. It's a really cool throwback character that... I enjoyed the look of it, the tone of the series, his background, his origin, all that stuff was really, really cool, and I liked him. And the thing was, when I remember reading it, what the hell are they going to do with this character, and where are they going to go with this? Because they kind of set him up. He's really powerful. Is this miniseries even in the normal 616 universe? I don't know. Me seeing him on the team, I was really, really digging it. I was very happy. The other ones actually I thought was Spider-Man. Because it's still the Doc Ock Spider-Man, so how he's going to interact will be really interesting. The fact that they're bringing back Power Man, which isn't the Luke Cage Power Man, there's another kid that took the title, who I want to say is Hispanic. I think. I could be wrong on that. I thought he was Hispanic for some reason. But to see Luke Cage interact with him finally should be really cool, because from what I remember, the only person that's really interacted with him at all was Iron Fist. And from what I saw comments about it was like Luke Cage is almost going to take on the Iron Fist role of mentoring this kid, which could be kind of cool. And the kid, he was okay from what I read. He never kind of blew me away as a character that I really thought should go anywhere, but he's got potential, I guess. As a team, he should be good. Part of a team, I mean, he should be good. I don't remember who else. Like, they revealed, it was Spider-Man, Luke
they
Cage.
They had White Tiger, who I only know about from the kids' cartoon, apparently. They had someone who I thought looked like Trilogy, but isn't. Remember him from the Avengers? The second African
Avengers. Oh, yeah.
It looks like it was him, but from a drawing, but I guess he's not actually in the team. She-Hulk's in it.
Which is another odd one. Like, you'd think, why wouldn't you take She-Hulk out with you into space? Unless the Hulk is going out, in which case you're like, well, you've got two heavy hitters. Do you really need, or you already have a heavy hitter like him? Do you need another one?
I don't know, man. I mean, she's obviously better to have than the Hulk anyway, because she doesn't have any of the bad parts of the Hulk.
That's what was I going to say. She can keep her shit together, so I think you would want her in space. I mean, it's like, it'll be interesting. It's one of those, like, the Age of Ultron is wrapping up. Next week is the final issue of the 10-part series. I was really has been generally unimpressed with that event. Infinity on Free Comic Book Day had their number zero issue. I kind of read that and I was like, what the hell is this? So overall, I'm pretty, I'm skeptical as to what's coming out. I'm very skeptical, but we'll see. You know, it's kind of like they're one of their big events that they've been hyping, so they've got to pull something off.
Yeah, Infinity did not do anything for me. It just made me crave more hilarious, crazy Silver Age hijinks. But yeah, that would be it. But I'm looking for. I mean, I'm curious about that Marvels. Who's writing? You said the Mighty Avengers.
It's a mix. The Mighty Avengers, I don't remember. Like, I haven't gotten like an official press thing other than the teasers. I don't know who's writing it off the top of my head. And then the Infinity is like a mix of people. I think Hickman.
Yeah, because everyone is on that shit. Yeah.
Yeah, they like to do their jam writing, which I don't understand how you write by committee, but whatever.
It shows.
Yes, it does. Yes, 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 it does.
So, lessons learned, people. I still have my Brian Wood X-Men one open on my desk. And I will say one thing. It's a far more accurate baby than they usually have in comics. I've seen many bizarre, ugly mutant babies, especially whoever was doing the art for the Authority when Jenny Quantum was born. Like, that was, like, not a baby. I don't know what the hell that was supposed to be. It was like when you look at medieval paintings of Mary and Jesus, and Jesus looks like a shrunken, full-sized adult. It was like that, but in comic book form. And that's not unusual. So I definitely think that whoever is doing the art on this, who is Oliver Coppola, has in fact looked at babies for reference.
That was funny. It was like Ken knows that too.
For comic artists.
That was Ken's comment too. It was like the baby was really, really good.
Yeah, it looks like a real baby.
Well, you got that down.
Congratulations.
He's moving from women to baby. This is the next thing. Once the artist can get women down, now they need to move to babies. So the other one that we were talking that you caught up on was Journey to Into Mystery.
Yeah.
So what do you think? We haven't talked about it in a while.
I've been continuing to enjoy this series a lot. I think the writing has been imaginative, fast-paced, fun. The art has been really beautiful and strong and interesting as well. I don't like it as much as I liked Kieran Gillen's run, but it's because she's like my favorite these days, basically. So I should probably stop comparing it. But in and of itself, Kelly Sue DeConnick's run of Journey into Mystery featuring Sue has been really fun, creative, energetic, beautiful art. I'm excited for this new story. I felt like there was a bit of a break between last issue and this one in terms of, oh, wait, what's happening now? Actually, I know that when I handed it to Frank to take a look at, he was like, did I read the last issue of this? And I don't know if you did or not, honey, but I could see why he felt a bit disjointed between the two. But I'm definitely interested in this new storyline. For folks who have not yet picked it up, I would just say that it involves Gaia, who is one of the... Or Adam, how do you pronounce her name? I'm useless at Norse mythology if it's not like...
I thought it was Gaia.
It's Gaia, okay. Gaia.
We'll just call it Gaia.
What does that mean? She's one of these three faces of the All-Mother. I'm assuming that she's the Mother... rather than the maiden or the crone, but there's
she's like
the crones to me, because God forbid there ever be anybody old and any old women in the comics. But anyway, so she's taken ill. So what does that mean for work for Earth? And Sif is going to go and do what she can to quarantine the illness and help figure out what it could be. And so we get a trip with Sif in space.
Yeah, like
and
I.
Of course,
so
you're gonna have Norse gods in space. Who's gonna make an appearance?
Oh, Beta Ray Bill.
I believe it's a certain horse-headed superhero called Beta Ray Bill. Yes.
So the first storyline with Sif, with her going in her berserker rage, like I didn't dig. It wasn't quite what I was looking for. It wasn't as good what came before, but. So they had the in-between issue with Fenris that I thought was really, really good. There were some laugh-out-loud moments. I really liked the writing. It was kind of back more into the style of what they were doing before.
Mm-hmm.
And then this latest one with Gaia, I liked. Some of the looks that Sif was giving was really funny. And then there was a comment when they're in the doctor's office, and it's a cheesy line. And she's sitting there, and the other, like, normal woman is just sitting in the doctor's office in the waiting room and staring at, like, Sif and the other maidens, like, what the hell is going on? And then Sif goes in to Jane Foster, and she's like, you know, I'm sorry for barging in. And Jane's just like, don't worry, it's a walk-in. And she just leans in and says, I think this woman drove here. She didn't walk.
Adorable.
Yeah, like really, really funny, and even the look on her face was perfect.
It was excellent comics acting.
Yeah,
yeah.
Really, really funny, and it was really appropriate that there should be like stupid minor misunderstandings in wordage. So, it was something I think that played off really, really well, and the storyline seems cool. Like. You know, and they brought it up, was like, if Gaia dies, what happens to Earth? And then at the end with Beta Ray Bill, and she's like, what the hell's going on? He's like, I'm chasing my girlfriend. I thought it was really, really funny. But, yeah, overall, like, so far these two issues post the first arc, I think are much better than the first arc.
Yeah, I feel like this is getting better, you know? It's definitely getting better over time. And it's funny. And I love having Sif talking with Jane Foster, and it's not like cat fight, because I fucking hate that.
It's the exact opposite. It's them talking shit about Thor and being
he can
barely handle one of us. Can you imagine if both of us got together at the same time what he would do? Which I thought was really good.
And I like it because it's like just recognizing Jane Foster for her own skills, you know.
Yeah. It's good. Like, overall, the series, and the original Journey into Mystery, of the, not the original, the previous volume, whatever you want to call it, I thought got better over time as well. So this seems to be kind of almost picking up on that tradition where it started off slow and just got better and better and better. And, you know, that makes me happy because I liked the previous volume. So I kind of really am hoping for this to be just anywhere near as good, and it's getting good. Like, it, I came close to dropping it, and I'm sticking around, so I think that says something.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I'm so really happy that they have such a lead character. She's a lot of fun. Definitely a cool female character. I was pretty sure, and I was right when I double checked that she that Sif had a relationship with Beta Ray Bill before, romantic nature. And I was just thinking how, it's like, you know, I was like, good for her, you know, being really open-minded. And it's funny, people have, superheroes and characters have relationships with non-human species all the time, but he's, like, particularly non-human looking, you know?
Do you have an issue with anthropomorphic horses?
Yeah, he's sort of an orange space horse, so... I have to say, like, I commend Sif's open-mindedness for having, you know, he's a totally sentient, you know, humanoid storm deity from space. You know, there's nothing wrong with having, you know, with her having a relationship with him. But I'm impressed that she was able to overlook the orange horse head because I think I'm a little bit too shallow for that. That would kind of throw me off a bit.
Speaking of... So- The other thing, and this reminded me, the other thing I really liked, it wasn't this issue, but the one before, was when they were going to go deal with Fenris, and she gets out of bed, Thor's bed, and was it Falandir, was just like, I thought you too, and she's just like, shut up, or don't even talk about, or don't go there, so it was just another one of those, like, really great writing, great reaction for both of them, like, that panel, I think, like, really nailed them all. That was another one that got me to laugh. The series is getting better. It's getting much, much better. I just thought the Sif is like berserker seemed very uncharacteristic, and I wasn't a fan.
Yeah, I mean, I loved the art in that part of it, which I guess I used to cut slack, and I love that intro piece. The who's the tough chick who. You know, they're like a fake Shaft intro, basically, for her, which I just thought was wonderful. Any excuse to do that. Marvel is getting better and better at the hilarious intros, for the record. Although, certainly, they have been made into an art form for Young Avengers.
I was about to say, and that's a perfect segue to Young Avengers.
Yeah.
I think you generally like the series more than I do. That's kind of the vibe I've been getting.
I love it. You like it, right? You're saying you enjoy
it,
but you're not like.
I like the writing. I don't like the plot, if that makes sense.
Oh, I totally understand how that can be. I disagree, but I understand how that can be. Yeah.
Yeah, like the whole thing with the zombie controlled mud mom weird stuff like that. I kind of was. I shrugged my shoulders.
Such a good parallel.
So what I did really like about it was I think while the like battle itself, I kind of like it didn't speak to me. The way they all got together, I did like. Like it, I think it was more of an organic way of bringing the team together than anything else. Other than Miss America, I think Miss America was a little weird.
No, she's awesome. What are you talking about? But like, I get what you're saying, but I actually really do like the device of having the teenage team unite because there's a controlling mother spirit that's trying to oppress the children. Like, that's like the classic story, right?
When you put it that way.
And I love the effect that the character mother has on all the other adults. Just mother makes all the other adults act extra authoritatively and fascist. Like, you know, like when you get one bad parent at the PTA meeting, and next thing you know, they're trying to ban all the books. So I guess it sort of viewed it as almost being like a metaphor for how those sort of scares go. You know, one parent decides, like, oh, my God, they're trying to do this. And then suddenly everybody else is like, yeah, let's go be afraid of that.
Okay, so you're reading way more into it than I did, and the way you put it, I really like it.
Yay!
Well, I totally appreciate it.
Okay. I'm glad I was able to help clarify that. Yeah,
yeah.
I mean, to me, like, anything Karen Gillan is doing has some sort of larger social relevance to it. And that's really how I saw it, but... And it's also a story that I think about a lot because I was very active in what I used to call at the time, like, kids' rights issues when I was a kid. So I always think about those things. But, you know, the other funny thing about this most recent issue of Young Avengers is how often Hawkeye, the girl, points out when things that happen in the story are clearly metaphors for something else. Everyone thought that that was, like, very appropriate for the character, although I'm not an expert on the character the way some folks are. But I don't know. It seems like, yeah, that's shit teenagers joke about. Like, oh, my God, I can't believe this thing that we're doing is somehow completely reflecting of the metaphor that we'd be talking about. Like, we used to always talk about stuff like that when I was a teenager. I suppose we still do. But I think teens are particularly prone to both to mythologizing their own lives, you know?
Yeah, I mean, like... You know, the other thing I do like about the series is they're all kids, but they're clearly different ages, and I think they act the different ages.
Yeah.
Which
yeah.
It's really nuanced, and whether or not, you know, I'm thinking it's done on purpose, that it comes off really, really well. Like, I'm kind of impressed by it, because that's kind of a difficult thing to do.
He's given them all specific ages, like when he's written about it on his Tumblr. So he's definitely aware of, like, Loki is the youngest, and that's just very significant.
Yeah, and then Kate and Novar, I think, are the oldest.
Yep.
Like, I would put, like, Kate and Novar, like, 17, 18 type thing, and then Wicked and Hulkling would probably be, like, maybe 16 or 17. Loki is probably 14, 15.
No, I think he's younger. I think he's like, I think
or
he's
younger, 13, something like that.
I totally think he's 13, yeah. I think it's, like, significant, yeah, significantly younger.
But it's clear, like, how they interact, their interactions with each other is different, where Kate is taking more of, like, an adult-ish role with all of them, and it's good. Like, I really, really like all that nuanced part, so... I mean, like, I'm going to keep on reading the series just for that. Like, you know, I like the interaction of...
Hello? Hello? Hello?
You there?
Yeah, I just missed you for a while, but now you're back.
Oh, weird. I was saying, like, I really appreciate...
Oh, no, you're gone again. Hello?
Hello?
Okay, now you're back.
Oh, sorry about that. I go and I get my internet fixed and still things aren't fantastic. stupid Comcast. So I was saying, overall, like, I kind of like the page layouts, like what they do with the pages. I can't think of anywhere else I see some of that stuff, in any other comic. Like, there was one, I think it was like the second issue, where they literally break out of the boxes and are walking around the page, outside of the panels, which is really, really cool.
Yeah, I think that the layout and compositions and the drawing is absolutely first rate. Really uses comics medium in a creative way. I really liked how they had people breaking out of panels. It was a fantastic issue when they did that. I also like when they sort of mapped out people's movements across that dance floor and in the club and stuff.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. I mean, the series alone, I think, is worth checking out just for the way that they, like, twist the layouts and play around with all that stuff. Like, it's absolutely brilliant and it's really, really cool. And I'd love to know how much of that is thought of beforehand or how much of that's the artist.
Yeah, I mean, the thing with Kieran and Jamie McKelvey is they've worked together so much. So I bet that they're probably doing all of that in conversation together, like very much as a team, you know.
Yeah, it seems organic. Whatever they're doing seems really organic.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I mean, because they worked on Phonogram together years ago and have been, you know, creative partners in a lot of projects. And there's going to be a new Phonogram book out very soon, I hear.
Cool.
Which would be amazing, as I adore the series. Did you read Phonogram?
I've heard good things. I've not read it.
You have to read it.
Okay.
We'll have to get you caught up in time for the new book to come out.
Well, if there's a new book, I absolutely, yes, I need to.
Fantastic.
Yes. Yeah, no, I mean, if there's a new thing, definitely need to check it out. So, yeah, whatever series, anything else we want to catch up on? Or?
Those are definitely some key ones for me. The Movement, which we condemned
yes.
last week for being inadequately political, is suddenly
yes.
much more political.
I noticed that as well,
it's
yes.
almost like Gail was listening to us, or maybe that she just needs more time set up for premise, perhaps.
Yeah, so there was that, and then the other thing was the very Oracle-like character.
Yeah.
Which I thought was interesting. I'm totally trying to... I'm blanking on her name.
I couldn't tell, though. I thought we had seen her outside, too. Like, I think she's not just in a wheelchair. I think that there's something... Didn't we see her out also not on one before?
I would have to go back and look. The thing that just caught me was the fact that she's in a wheelchair and she looked, you know, changed her hair color and she looks like Barbara Gordon.
Yeah, yeah.
That was kind of the big thing that stood out to me. but it was good. Like, the second issue I thought was a vast improvement of the first.
Oh, my God, yes. And I love what they did with the character mouse. I mean...
Yes. And there's some great humor there of, like, this is what I want to do with my dead mouse, but he was my favorite. And they're like, but you have a billion of them?
Yeah, like, literally, he does have a billion of them.
Yeah.
And then he eats it later on, because...
In a rather humorous scene.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's definitely funny. Definitely funny. I definitely feel like, yeah, this issue is much more overtly political. I mean, they basically tell the story, like, of a version of the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory fire in this, you know, I almost wish there was a footnote saying, this really happened, and in fact still happens around the world, where they tell that story early in the comic.
Well, I mean, I'm trying to think where, was it Bangladesh that just happened?
Yep, Bangladesh. Just
how many months ago was that? I was thinking about that, too.
Well, most recently there was a straight-up building collapse. But before then, there had been a fire where people had been locked in and had been not allowed to leave, exactly like what happened in New York.
So, I mean, theory, comics are like 3 months out, roughly, being written. Maybe
so this was
shorter.
Written not that long after the... factory fire in Bangladesh, but even without that, like, it's stuff that people know about, so I'm pleasantly happy and surprised, not surprised that Gail included something about that. I just hope that folks realize that it's, like, real.
I
think what's confusing in this issue was at the end where Catharsis says that she is a cop. I don't know what she means with that.
I wanted to ask you about that one. So, earlier in the issue, they made a comment how there was like a traitor among them. So I'm assuming that she is the one that's leaking, and that she works for both, or she is working with both. I have no idea. Like, I'm this is what I'm assuming. I'm not 100% sure if that's the case. But yeah, so it was interesting. Like, that part had me perk up and be like, wait, what? Because it's also weird that
yeah,
she's
a
cop.
Confusing. She looks so young, but I guess that's why they would choose her to infiltrate them, is because she looks believably young.
Yeah, well, there was that too, but also she kind of like goes vigilante, and she's a cop at the same time. That's what that threw me off.
That it would make her be an agent provocateur on the part of the police.
Yeah.
So that would not be uncharacteristic or surprising.
Yeah, I mean, that was kind of the other. It'll be interesting. Like, that had me pretty. It had me interested in seeing what's coming up. Like, I was kind of on the edge of the series, and now I'm like, oh, this. That was an interesting twist.
I'm a bit confused by her power set, but I guess she has robot wings. I'm just going to go with that.
Yeah, I'm still figuring out everyone's power set.
Yeah, that's okay, I love Virtue's costume. She's got a great costume in general look.
Yeah, it's overall, I think it's vast improvement. Like, the second issue is vast improvement. First, like, I like the characters. I'm kind of digging the costumes, and it's good. Like, it's gotten to the point where I'm interested and want to see what happens next.
I almost picked up the new copy of The Green Team and decided against it.
Yeah, it's a tough one.
Because this one was so good, I was like, maybe I should check out the other.
It's...
So that's definitely progress over last time we spoke. I also should just say that what I'm most excited about is we're promised class warfare in the next issue. So it's also on the last page of this comic.
Yeah, I mean, it really could have been just the fact that, like, you couldn't really do, you know, you can only do so much in an issue. So it's one where I think, you know, I was down, but I'm still willing to give it the first arc to see where it goes. And hopefully a lot of our concerns are kind of addressed in that. And it seems off at least the second issue, we're getting there. We're getting closer to what we imagine.
Yeah, I hope so.
Or at least what I imagine. So. I'm crossing my fingers. Because I like Gail's writing.
Yeah, I know. I've been really hungry for just a fantastic Gail Simone series for a while. So.
Well, we got Red Sonja coming up soon.
Yes. Yeah, when is that going to be out? They put some Red Sonjas in my box that were not Gail's, and I took some.
No, I want to say it's this month.
It seems about time.
Yeah, it's definitely not this week. It might be next week or the week after. I'm across my fingers that it's, like, soon, because it looks kind of cool.
I'm really excited for that. Oh, one more observation for folks reading the movement. So the sort of the model of what the folks are doing with having the, they have a daycare center, and they have children and food, and they're teaching classes in the building. Like, a lot of that stuff is, and I'm sure this was not new, but I just happen to be more knowledgeable about 60s stuff than I am about some other decades. But this is totally, like, straight up, like, what the Black Panthers were doing in the cities before they got completely infiltrated and destroyed by the police. You know, focusing on, like, feeding people in the community and education classes were, like, a huge part. And in previously underutilized spaces was, like, a huge part of what the Black Panther Party was doing. So I thought that was a very astute choice for the writer, because, like, yes, that is how movements are built, is through doing this sort of work. So.
Yeah, that was it was like another detail that I really liked about the issue. I thought it was it seemed really realistic, and at the same time it added a lot to the issue. So I was digging it.
Yeah, and I like how they're confronting the question of what the hell do you do with your prisoner now, your cop prisoners, like, what's the next?
Yeah. And when do you cross that line and be no more better than the cops?
Yep.
So, yeah, I mean...
No, well, I'm not... Yeah.
it was good. Like, it was an improvement over the first. I'll stick around for the rest of the first arc to see where it goes from here.
Oh, you want to talk about Superman movie? You want to talk about Superman movie?
Well, I feel like we kind of got it. It opens up this week. You know, obviously for folks who haven't seen the bombardment of ads that are out there. So I'm not like a big Superman fan, but I'm wondering, like, so one, do you tend to go see comic movies, and does this one have like any interest to you at all?
I only see comic book movies when they're really well reviewed. I don't like watching bad movies, even if it's a genre that I like. So I'm going to definitely see what the critics are saying before I make a decision. I'm not a huge Superman fan, but as you folks probably know, if there's an artist I like, if there's a writer I like, I'll read a book, and that's pretty much how I feel about this. You know, if the quality of the work, if the quality of the work is up to par, I'll absolutely check out the movie.
Fair enough. Yeah, I mean, it's like one, I've got my midnight tickets because I love doing midnight shows. Yeah, so I'm going to be completely dead to the world on Friday.
I was going to say, but that's how you ended up doing things. Like, you actually watched the Green Lantern movie.
Oh, my God.
I'm really
sorry
about that.
It was so bad.
I didn't have to see it because I knew it was bad, so I didn't watch it. I didn't lose all those minutes of my life.
Yeah, but at least I'll say it's found minutes because it's the midnight, and it's not like I'll be up till 2 in the morning anyways. That's how I justify it. Yeah, I mean, it's one that's interesting. So the fascinating was I did another Facebook study and did it today of Superman because I'm, you know, why not? I want to see what their fans are. And when it came down to it, like, Superman fans, when it came to men and women, was more evenly split than Iron Man, Batman, DC Comics, general comic fandom. And then the other thing that really stood out was a high level of Spanish speakers.
Neat.
Which I thought was interesting. So the Spanish speakers...
Can you tell if they're Spanish speakers who are living in America or if they're Spanish speakers who are living in...
This is just the United States. Yeah, no, this is just the United States. So the Spanish speakers, my only thought was is that he has, you know, even the ultimate immigrant story.
Yeah, exactly.
So obviously resonates, or I would think it would resonate. And then the other, the women one... kind of fascinating in that it splits at the 54 age mark where women start becoming the majority of fans, and then 58 to 61 it gets a little bit more, and then at 62 to 64 it goes back to a 50-50 split, totally even, which I thought was really, really interesting. So other than that, like, overall, like, the... same gender interest is better than Batman and Iron Man, and you know, it seemed to be more of like an even population. They tend to be more married, and it's a fascinating one. So if folks want to check that out, you can go to Graphic Policy and check out the report. It's always fun to kind of see that. Next week, because World War Z is coming out, I want to see what zombie fans are like. This is something that's been fascinating me as to who the hell likes zombie fan or zombie movies and books and
all that stuff. Doesn't
everyone like
zombie movies?
Well, that's what I'm wondering. That's what I'm really wondering. We'll find out, because I really have no idea. Like, I don't know what the hell to expect. So, if nothing else, it'll be interesting to compare to regular comic fans.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, folks should definitely know that, you know, Brett does these amazing research work, basically, into Facebook fandom of various geek-related topics. So if you're ever looking for a picture of what that is, definitely check out Graphic Policy, the blog. Are you going to post the link to the report to our Twitter feed for our listeners?
Yes, I got to get better at that. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I've done cool ones. So I've done Batman, Iron Man. I did a global comic fandom, Marvel, DC, Superman, Star Trek when Star Trek opened. Star Trek was actually really, was a bit more what I expected. It was close to what I expected it to be. So a lot of like same gender interest, highly educated, not shocking, and also older. So Star Trek fans tend to be older, which didn't surprise me. But overall, like it's fun. Like I'm really kind of digging it. So the other would be is if folks have suggestions, I'm always up for suggestions as to what to look at. So next week is World War Z. I'm gonna check that out. Some of the other ones I think are time for other stuff. But if folks have good ones, let us know. I'm always up for a challenge.
Yeah, folks, think of this as your opportunity to commission research from someone who's an expert. How often do you get to do that? Not that often. So, highly endorse picking out that work.
Yeah, so, I mean, anything else do we have on the docket, or?
I don't think so. I'll reassure folks I'm going to figure out why my issue of FF7 was missing from my box and get back with people about it to talk next time. If folks have any recommendations for us, things that you think we should be reading that we haven't, that we should check out, shoot us a line.
Yeah. So,
hello?
Yeah. So FF, you'll know the panel that I'm talking about when you get to it.
Gotcha. I'm holding my breath.
You will totally know the panel that I'm talking about.
Am I going to be happy or am I going to be sad?
Oh, you will start laughing and be so happy.
Yes! Excellent!
It's
okay.
Kind of awesome. It's something that the wizard says that's amazing.
Cool. I'm excited. I was always excited. And I was disappointed it wasn't in my box. Well, thank you, everyone. Yeah.
All right. So I guess that we're going to wrap up. So we're wrapping up the latest episode of Graphic Policy Radio. You can keep up with us daily at graphicpolicy.com, where we do news, reviews, previews, and more every single day, updated hourly, usually. So in the coming weeks, when you head to see The Man of Steel and your non-comic reading fans say they really, really enjoyed it, go out, find some great comics and suggest them for them to get them into what they've been missing, because we know as comic readers, what's out there is way better than what's being in the movies. We've got amazing stories that are 75 years worth of Superman out there. So introduce your friends who might like the movies to the comics. And with that, I'm Brett.
And I'm Ilana.
And have a geeky week and keep on reading.